10. Jens Fletterich's hands moved in exaggerated arcs, like a shadow boxer. Bella, Hinks, and Pegis stared at him, mesmerized. He kept that up for another minute, his gestures gradually becoming slow and resigned, until he stopped moving completely. He lay still for another minute, breathing shallowly. At the end of that minute, he flipped up the opaque mask of the immersion headset and unbuckled himself from the couch. "It's gone," he said. "Gone?" Bella asked. "The link is dead. I can't talk to the machine anymore." "But you were nowhere near the limit of radio communications," Hink said. "Was there a falling off of signal strength?" "Nothing," he said. "It just disappeared. One moment I was there, looking back at Rockhopper. I could still see Janus. And then I just wasn't there anymore." "As if someone cut the puppet strings," Bella said. "No," he said, correcting her with gentle firmness. "That's not quite how it felt. There was a moment, a transition." For once, this usually precise man struggled for words. It was as if the strings became stretched, pulled, until they snapped, but not cut, not cut at all. Hinks knelt down next to the couch. "This looks funny," she said, scratching a finger across one of her flexi readouts. "Look at the Doppler on your telemetry." Fletterich removed the heavy immersion gear. Still gloved, he took the flexi from her. "It should have been flat," he said. "It was, after you stopped burning fuel. That is, right until the end. Then something funny happened." "Show me," Bella said. The free flyer had accelerated away from Rockhopper, firing its nuclear rocket until it had run out of fuel. The radio signal sent back by the free flyer had become red-shifted as its recessional velocity increased. That was entirely expected, as was the flattening of the red-shift curve from the moment that the fuel ran out and the free flyer coasted away at constant velocity. And it should have stayed like that all the way until loss of radio contact. But it hadn't. In the last 6 seconds before Fletterich lost contact with the free flyer, the Doppler curve had begun to rise again. The rise was sharp as well, the slope of the curve steeper than it had been during the hour-long boost phase. With a mere 6 seconds of data to go on, Bella could only estimate the surge in acceleration that the free flyer had experienced, but she judged that the slope was around 5 times steeper, which meant that the free flyer had experienced a boost in acceleration of 5 Gs before radio contact was interrupted. "That isn't possible," she said, shaking her head in flat denial. "There has to be a mistake, a misreading." "It's all right there," Hinks said. "Then give me an explanation for it. Could there have been a reignition of the motor at 5 Gs? Fletterich chose to answer. "No, it was programmed to burn until the fuel was completely exhausted. And even if there'd been a small amount of fuel in the system, which there wasn't, there's no reason why the motor would ramp up to 5 Gs unless we specified that in the burn sequence, which we didn't." "An explosion, then," Bella said. "Something uncontained. A detonation of fuel vapor violent enough to provide some impetus to the free flyer." "If there had been an explosion," Fletterich said, "I think we'd have seen some of the telemetry channels drop out, unless it was a very selective explosion that managed not to damage any mission-critical systems, yet still hurled the free flyer away from us at 5 Gs along exactly the same vector it was already following." Bella smiled at him. She loved sarcasm, especially from engineers. "Oh, wait," Hink said, scowling at one of the flexi readouts. "This is really odd. This really makes no sense." "What now?" Bella asked. "You see this telemetry channel?" Hinks indicated one of the boxed graphs containing a display of some system parameter against time. "That's data from the free flyer's onboard accelerometer. It's like an inertial compass. But look how it starts. Flat at 1G for 1 hour. Then it does a delta function to 0Gs. That's the engine shutting down. All okay so far. Then it holds at zero for another 25 minutes, which is the time the free flyer spent in cruise phase. And then it climbs to 5 Gs, Bella said. "No, that's my point. It stays flat at zero right until the last data packet." That's weird, Bella said. "Let me get this straight. The Doppler telemetry says the free flyer went shooting off at 5 Gs during the last 6 seconds of transmission." "Correct," Hink said. "While the onboard accelerometer says nothing happened." "Right. then one or both channels must be incorrect. So maybe my putative explosion really did happen and knocked out the accelerometer.
Well, no, Hinks said patiently. That's not what we'd see if that had happened. We'd get zero packets on that channel, whereas the packets we received from the accelerometer were all well-formed.
According to the accelerometer, Fletcherick said, the Free Flyer didn't feel that 5G surge at all.
But it did accelerate, Bella said.
According to the telemetry.
So which is right?
They're both right, Svetlana said. She had just appeared in the puppet booth. Bella had not given her permission to leave her quarters. Indeed, her appearance here was a clear violation of the agreed terms of her confinement, which permitted her limited access to Shipnet if she agreed to treat her room as a locked and guarded prison cell. But at that moment Bella felt no inclination to punish her.
You have an explanation? She asked.
I have one, Svetlana said, but you're not going to like it.
Just tell me what you think is going on, Bella said.
I want Belinda to try something for me first. It shouldn't take her long.
I'm listening, Pegasus said.
Point the uplink dish back in the direction of Earth, if you haven't already done so.
It's done, Pegasus said, shaking her head, and there still isn't a signal.
No, but I think I know where you can find one. You need to shift the bend pass well out of the frequency range you're searching.
We've allowed for the Doppler effect.
Just try it. Look on the low frequency side, as if you'd underestimated the degree of redshift.
I don't see, Pegasus began.
Svetlana cut her off impatiently.
Just do it, all right? Start at the nominal frequency and slide the bend pass into the red. Tell me when you hit a signal.
It took less time than Bella had expected. Pegasus entered commands into her flexi, talking directly to the uplink antenna. Within a few minutes, Bella saw her frown and opened her mouth in a silent,
What?
You found your uplink signal, haven't you? Svetlana said.
Earth is still on the air.
They always were. You were just looking off frequency.
That isn't possible, Pegasus said. I've had to apply half as much redshift again.
That can't be right, Bella said. But she could tell from Svetlana's expression, fearful and triumphant at the same time, that there had been no mistake.
It's right, she said.
Sveta, what's happening?
Svetlana coughed and looked at everyone in the little gathering.
What's happening is that we're moving faster than we thought we were, she said. That's why the Doppler shift was wrong. You weren't allowing for enough motion difference between us and Earth.
We know how fast we're moving, Bella said.
No, we don't. We think we do, but that's only because we've made a terrible mistake.
Svetlana paused. She had their absolute attention. It wasn't the Free Flyer that accelerated away at 5Gs. It was us.
We're the thing that's accelerating.
At 5Gs?
We're standing still, Sveta. We're not even moving as quickly as we expected to be.
No, she said with a resigned calm. We're moving much, much faster than we were.
All this since Fletcherick lost his signal?
No. We've been accelerating for a lot longer than that, at least as far back as the time when we first lost the Earth signal, and probably for several hours before that.
How can you know this?
Only thing that fits the data.
You're also having problems with star trackers.
Fine. That's exactly what I'd expect if we'd suddenly picked up a lot of speed.
Explain, Bella said. Her mouth felt dry.
The trackers are set up to recognize bright stars in fixed constellations. They're programmed to ignore stars that don't fall at exactly the right angular separations from each other. The problem is that now the stars have moved relative to each other, so they can't find the matches they expect. It's called aberration, an apparent displacement in the positions due to speed.
I don't get it, Hinks said. What has speed got to do with where the stars are?
Bella was afraid that Svetlana was going to lash out at the robotics technician for not knowing basic astrogation theory, but instead she seemed drained of all fury.
It's like this. You're driving at night, in snow. There's no wind, yet the snow seems to be falling horizontally, heading towards your windshield from the direction you're driving, even though you know it's really falling vertically. Well, the same thing's happening with starlight, only to a much smaller degree. Trouble is, it's still enough to throw the trackers.
And the trackers don't know that? Hinks asked. No, they do know it, and they're programmed to correct their expected stellar positions to allow for aberration. But to do that properly, they need to know how fast they're moving. The Free Flyers hitch a ride with Rockhopper, Saul Regis said, speaking for the first time since Svetlana's arrival. They assume that Rockhopper knows how fast it's moving, so they query Rockhopper to keep their kinematic parameter file up to date. In other words, they ask the ship how much of a correction to allow for, and the ship tells them, Svetlana said, but this time the ship got it wrong. We can check this as well, Bella said. It won't be difficult, but it still doesn't answer my basic question. What the hell is happening? Bella called Svetlana and Craig Schrope to her office. Before Schrope could lodge an objection to Svetlana being there, Bella said, These are exceptional circumstances, which is why I'm turning a blind eye to Svetlana's presence. She's already solved the uplink problem, and I believe she has an explanation for the Star Tracker errors as well. Schrope's pen glittered in his hand like a twirling six-shooter. Let's hear it. It looks as if Janus is dragging us with it, Svetlana said. We're caught in some kind of slipstream. Schrope pulled a face. It's moving through vacuum. You don't get slipstreams in vacuum. Svetlana kept her composure. There's a lot here we don't understand. Adding one more thing to the list doesn't strike me as the worst crime imaginable. Schrope responded with a non-committal shrug. Explain what you think is happening, Bella said. Then what you think we should do about it. I think we should reverse, and reverse fast. We should be doing it already, not sitting around discussing it. I still need to hear your argument, Bella said patiently. If I'm swayed by it, I promise I'll act with all due swiftness. Svetlana leaned forward. I'll tell you, but you have to act as soon as I'm done. Every second we spend... Just tell us, Schrope said. Janus never slowed its rate of acceleration. Our only point of reference was the laser we were shining on Janus, and suddenly we were closing the distance too quickly. So we throttled back our engine in response. By the time we reached the initial study position, we thought we were nearly in freefall, but we weren't. We were still accelerating. Then why didn't we feel it? Schrope asked. Because we're in an accelerated reference frame that just happens to feel inertial. I have no idea what this implies. Janus must be doing something weird to space-time, and we're caught up in that weirdness. Bella fingered her shark's teeth necklace. So what happened with the Free Flyer? My best guess is that we let it drop far enough behind us to fall out of the slipstream, Svetlana said. It went from being caught in this accelerating field to not accelerating at all. We read that as the Free Flyer suddenly accelerating for no reason. But it was us all along. But 5 G's? That's ridiculous. Janus was never accelerating that hard. Something's changed in that case. When Janus left Saturn, it was shedding ice, just as we'd expect if it were a physical object experiencing stresses due to its own acceleration. But at some point, the ice shedding stopped. We saw that in the images. We just didn't think about what it meant. Which was? Janus must have switched over to a different drive mechanism. Maybe it used one drive to leave the solar system, something relatively slow and primitive by Spican standards, but which wouldn't do too much harm to the neighborhood. But now it's a long way from the sun. It's engaged something altogether more powerful, something capable of accelerating an entire moon at 5 G's. And we're stuck in the wake, Bella said. Svetlana nodded. It's been at least a day. We'll have a better idea of how fast we're moving once we have precise numbers on the extra Doppler component. But I'll give you a good guess. We've been sustaining 5 G's ever since we lost contact with Earth. Probably longer. We were moving at 3% of the speed of light this time yesterday. Now you'd better make that 4.5%, maybe even 5. What exactly does that mean? Schrope said, in the voice of a man who had just seen his own ghost. In terms of the mission objectives, I mean. I don't know about the mission objectives, Craig, but I'll tell you what it means to you personally if we don't get out of this fast. It means you're fucked. It means we're all fucked. Bella flinched, expecting Schrope to react, but nothing came. He just sat there in a slack-jawed stupor, as if he had been tranquilized.
If this is confirmed, Bella said tentatively, then what should we do? Can we back out of the slipstream or whatever it is?
We can try, said Svetlana. The free flyer didn't appear to suffer any damage when it left the slipstream. We only lost contact with it because of the sudden shift in frequencies.
We'll need to know that for certain before we try anything. I'll have Pegas and Hink see if they can widen the reception band pass and pick up a signal.
We don't have time for this, Bella. We have to reverse out of this now, before it pulls us any faster than we're already traveling.
Not until we know that the free flyer survived the transition. It shouldn't take long. She reached for her flexi, preparing to give the order. She already regretted not having Pegas and Hinks present in her office.
Bella, Svetlana said urgently, listen to me. Every minute you sit here thinking about this is an additional 3 kilometers per second of speed we have to lose if we ever want to get home. There isn't time to look into all the angles here. You have to move us now.
Schrope suddenly came back to life. The free flyer. How long did it take to clear the slipstream? Svetlana answered him with a flat absence of emotion. It was more than half a light second out. If we push at half a G now, we might reach the dropout point in 2 or 3 hours, by which time we'll be moving even faster.
Schrope looked at Bella. Perhaps we should consider a withdrawal. He said it plaintively, like a child after sweets. Bella saw it plainly, the utter collapse of his neatly ordered corporate world. Until now, Schrope had been in control. Now he was at the mercy of something frightening and powerful in equal measure. Bella's flexi chimed with an incoming call from Belinda Pegas. She had a hard number on the aberration problem.
This is not good, she said, as if Bella had imagined it could be anything else. To match the star positions as we see them, we need to allow for... She lowered her eyes, reading data from another flexi. 4.98% of the speed of light.
Good work, Bella said.
We've picked up a faint signal from the free flyer, Pegas said, almost apologetically. We allowed for the excess in our Doppler shift. It's worryingly consistent. Does the free flyer telemetry look healthy?
No sign of any damage. The accelerometer curve was...
flat, Bella finished for her.
Yes.
Bella turned to Svetlana. Then we could, theoretically, survive exiting the slipstream.
Start the process now, Svetlana urged. Full burn at half a G. We'll ditch the remaining mass drivers, anything we absolutely don't need.
We still have to turn the ship around, Bella said. That'll take 2 hours if we don't want to snap in two.
Svetlana closed her eyes. Jesus, I forgot.
Rockhopper didn't take kindly to torsional stresses, any more than a skyscraper took kindly to being tipped on its side. Slewing the ship, bringing the fusion motors around to reverse their thrust, was a delicate operation that could not be hurried. Normally, there was no need to hurry it.
Belinda, Bella said, drop whatever you're doing and prep for a 180-degree turnaround. Emergency slew speed. I don't care if we blow the warranty on this one.
I'm on it, Pegas said. Anything else?
Yes, Bella said.
While we're slewing, I want a full flight dynamics update. Do we still have enough fuel left to slow down? Do we have enough to make it home after that?
I'll get those numbers for you, Pegas said. Permission to begin the slew as soon as we're stowed.
Granted. Begin it immediately if you can.
When the call was complete, Svetlana said quietly, We'll never make it in time.
We'll try. That's all we can do.
A ship-wide siren alerted the crew of the impending slew, warning everyone to secure bodies, equipment, and possessions against the impending kick from the steering thrusters. When it came, the jolt was no worse than a mild fender bender, but it still felt ominous and wrong, a shove in a direction in which the ship rarely moved. The water in Bella's fish tank sloshed to the lid, and the fish looked agitated. The ship's frame creaked and groaned before settling down again.
We're rotating at 3 minutes of arc per second, Pegas told Bella, which is as fast as I can manage.
Bella did the sums.
It's not fast enough. It's still going to take us another hour to get the nose turned around at that rate.
The systems won't allow a faster rotation, Pegas said. Thruster control is under software override. I can slow the rotation, but not speed it up.
Pass me the flexi, Svetlana said. Bella slid it to her and indicated that she should speak. Belinda, listen carefully. There's a file you need to update. I'll talk you through it, all right?
Go ahead, Peggy said.
Open a separate window and navigate to Dynamics Tasks. Make sure you do it under System Privilege.
Bella heard Pegasus's fingers scratching against the hide of her flexi. After a few moments, they heard her say, I'm there.
You should see two subdirectories. Go into OMS_tasks and look for a file called something like Failsafe Limits.
Not seeing it. Not seeing it, Pegasus said. Oh, wait. There's something called struct_limbs.
That's probably the one. Open it and scroll down until you see a parameter called slew_upper_limits, or something similar. It'll be about 20 lines down.
Got it, Pegasus said quickly.
The numeric field gives our maximum permitted slew rate in fractional degrees per second. It should say something like 0.05 right now.
Yep, got it. You want me to change that?
Svetlana glanced at Bella. That failsafe's there for a reason. It's to stop the ship tearing itself apart.
Increase it to 0.075, Bella said. I'll take responsibility if she snaps.
Do it, Svetlana said to Pegasus.
I've made the change, Pegasus said.
Close the file. Go back to your navigation window and see if the ship accepts the new rate of slew.
I'm on it. Better brace, because if this goes through...
Bella flinched, but nothing happened. No shove of motion, no creaking or groaning.
Did you get a reaction from the rockets? Svetlana asked.
No dice. She still isn't accepting an increased rate of slew. Bella saw Svetlana screw her eyes shut in absolute concentration, her face taking on an expression that spoke as much of pain as it did of intense intellectual effort. Svetlana knew Rockhopper's functional parameters better than anyone alive. But the ship was still too complex for any one person to know with an easy intimacy.
Okay, she said, her face slackening. I think I know what the problem is. The slew management system won't pick up the changes to the file unless we zero the slew and start again.
God damn, Bella muttered. Who the hell designed this piece of crap?
Engineers, Svetlana said tersely.
All right, do it. Zero the slew and start over.
After a few tense moments, the siren sounded again. The shove came from the opposite direction this time, halting the ship's inching rotation. There was another protestation from the structure, like an old building flexing in a squall.
Zero, Pegasus said.
Try it again, Svetlana told her, and be ready to shut it down fast. Another siren warning sounded. The shove was half as powerful again this time, the difference perceptible. The water in the fish tank found its way through the gap between the top of the tank and the lid, sluicing onto Bella's carpet. The ship registered its disapproval, but so far it seemed to be holding together.
How are we doing? Bella asked Pegasus.
We're in one piece. No reports of pressure breaches or fatigue warnings. But the ship's nervous system was still in tatters after the mass driver accident, Bella thought. Only vital command signals were being routed up and down the spine. She did not think it likely that damage reports would have been able to reach her anyway.
Belinda, I need one of your team stationed at a viewing port. I want someone keeping an actual eye on the spine and engine assembly.
It's okay, Pegasus said. We're holding.
At the moment we are, but I'm going to zero the slew again. This still isn't fast enough.
We're already pushing the envelope here, Svetlana warned.
It can take some more pushing. Belinda, edit that file again and raise our slew rate to 0.1 degree per second.
Svetlana shook her head in warning. You'll have exceeded the failsafe margin by a factor of 2.
I thought you were the one keen to get out of here.
I am, but I know what this ship is built to take, and what it definitely isn't built to take.
Timidly, Pegasus said, I've updated the file. Shall I?
Zero the slew, Bella said. Zero and restart.
I don't recommend that we do this. Svetlana said.
Duly noted. If the ship breaks up, you can have the satisfaction of telling me you were right.
The thrusters killed the slew. More water sloshed from the fish tank, more noises signaled the ship's displeasure. But Rockhopper held together. 10 or 15 seconds passed. Then came the next warning siren. What, Bella wondered, did the rest of the crew think was going on? If she had been less preoccupied, she might have found time to speak to them. Then again, perhaps not speaking to them was the kind of thing. It was not necessarily good to know that the ship was being tested to its limits. Please let me believe that this ship was designed to take more punishment than the design specifications, Bella prayed. Please let me believe that the engineers were in a generous mood. But the ship held. Bella's fish tank lost more water, but it would all be collected again by the humidity filters, even if it took months for the lost allocation to wind its way back to her cabin. We're in one piece, Pegas said, her surprise unconcealed, slowing at 1 degree every 10 seconds. We'll be nose around in about 27 minutes. Then we'll have to slow again, Bella thought, but if the ship had withstood this latest jolt, it would probably withstand that one as well. She would push it no further. They were inching around no faster than the minute hand of a clock, but it would be insane to push for more. I'm still going to need that flight dynamics report, Bella said. The sooner the better. 30 minutes until they could fire the engine. 2 hours more, at least, until they reached the point where the free flyer had appeared to accelerate away. And all the while, Janus was pulling them ever faster, making their homeward journey increasingly difficult. If flight dynamics said it could not be done, what then? She needed to have a plan in place for that eventuality, even if that plan consisted of nothing more than trying. The best-case scenario was that they had enough fuel left in the tanks not only to slow down to the local solar rest frame, but also to make it back home in a reasonable amount of time. If that wasn't feasible, then Earth would have to meet them halfway with some kind of resupply operation, and if that wasn't possible, if all they could do was stop, then Earth would have to come all the way out here to rescue them. Maybe they could endure that long. Rockhopper's closed-cycle life support system could sustain them for a good long while. It wouldn't be comfortable, there would be no luxuries, but it could keep the crew alive. But it would still take power to make that life support tick, and if they ran out of fuel, they would also lose their main source of power. There were backup systems, but they were designed to keep the ship warm and habitable for a handful of weeks during reactor downtime. They were not designed for the months, or years, that it would take Earth to implement a rescue operation. That was a pretty bad scenario. But there was a worst-case option that she had to consider as well. What if they couldn't slow down? She was sure they would be able to decelerate a bit, but the amount necessary? If, when the fuel tanks gave their last splutter and ran out, the ship was still moving in the direction of Spica at 1 or 2% of the speed of light, nothing might ever catch them. Not for years, anyway. And by that time, would anyone even bother just to recover 145 cold, dry corpses? Not deep shaft, at any rate. Her flexi chimed. Yes, Belinda, she asked, hoping that no one could pick up on the anxiety she felt. I have that flight dynamics report. It still needs to be double-checked, but... Bella interrupted her. What's the verdict? We can slow down if we make it out of the slipstream within 3 hours. And then? We'll have a small margin, just enough fuel to put us on the return trajectory. We won't have enough to break at the other end, but shuttles should still be able to reach us. How long will it take? 10 months. Pegas said. That's the most optimistic estimate. Bella shot a glance at Svetlana. And that scenario? It was based on the assumption that our fuel load reading is accurate? Yes, of course, Pegas said. Run it again, Bella told her. Assume that the fuel load reading is 15% lower than the systems are telling us. Shrope stirred. We've been over this already. There's no reason to take Barsegian seriously. We won't make it, Svetlana said, addressing Bella as if Shrope was not there. It's already marginal. Drop that fuel load by 15% and we'll never even slow down. I'll wait for flight dynamics to get back to me, Bella said. But if, for the sake of argument, you're right about this, is there anything we can do about it? The time to do something, Svetlana said, would have been 2 weeks ago. But I didn't, Bella said, and here we are. So let's deal with it. Assume the fuel load is marginal. Could we improve our situation by escaping the slipstream sooner? Svetlana's face glazed over as she thought about it. For all the tension between them, she could not ignore a technical query.
Perhaps, but we're already basing our calculations on a half-G burn.
I know that, Bella said. But could you squeeze more thrust out of the engine? Would it give us a G, or more than a G, if only for the time it takes us to clear the slipstream?
I don't know, Svetlana said. I've never even considered it before. It's well outside the design limits.
What about the structural frame of the ship?
If we ditched the remaining mass drivers,
that's a given.
Then if it came to that, she might hold. But the engine?
I don't know. I'd need to look into it. We'd be burning fuel at twice our usual rate.
But presumably it's better to burn fuel now, while we're still inside the slipstream.
I understand. Svetlana suddenly seemed distant, as if her body was a shell while her mind was elsewhere, roving the mental architecture of the ship, considering fearful new possibilities.
15 minutes to end of SLU, Pegas reported. Flight Dynamics has those numbers. It doesn't look good for the 15% less scenario. We'd still have a residual drift in the direction of Spica.
How fast?
4,000 clicks per second. That's more than 1% of the speed of light. Thank you, Belinda. Now do me one final favor. Rerun the simulation. Assume the same fuel deficit, but allow for a 2G burn for the first 30 minutes, or until we've cleared the slipstream. Bella spoke with exaggerated clarity, mindful that a single misunderstanding could cost them dearly.
Oh, and Belinda?
Yes, Bella?
I need an answer on that pretty quickly. Bella sat down at her desk and breathed in deeply. Here it was, she thought, that cusp, that moment of maximum crisis she had always known would visit her at some point in her career. From time to time she had wondered what shape it would take, and more importantly, how she would rise to meet it. She had always hoped her reaction would be adequate at the very least. What she had never imagined was that when that moment came she would be sitting at her desk with her feet squishing soggy carpet. But that was reality, always pissing on the epic moment. The Flexi shook a little. Her hands were trembling. Flight Dynamics said that a 2G burn would compensate for most of the fuel deficit. It would not get them home, but it would bring them to a stop in the local rest frame. Stop, in this case, meaning that they would have a residual velocity relative to the sun of no more than a few tens of kilometers per second. Planetary speed. Manageable. But they would still be horribly far from home, and that was assuming the ship survived the burn in the first place. She had read Svetlana's expression. There was nothing there that resembled optimism. It was a savage risk, and all it would achieve at best would be to strand them unspeakably far from home, with no fuel left to keep the ship running. They would be dead before any rescue or resupply effort ever reached them. But what was the alternative? Well, there was one. She picked up her Flexi and placed a call to her former second-in-command. Jim Chisholm was conscious, if not exactly alert. If he had been sleeping, the violent jolting of the SLU would have been sure to wake him up, even in the green calm of the infirmary.
"Hello, Bella," he said, favouring her with a weary smile. "So what's up?"
"We're in a spot of bother."
"That much I'd gathered.
I think I may have to make a very tough decision." She tried to look him in the eye, as directly as the Flexi's imaging system allowed. The blue-green cast of the dying iridophores made Chisholm's hold on life appear even more tenuous.
"The kind that affects me?" Chisholm asked,
an amused wrinkle etching the corner of his right eye.
"The kind that affects us all," Bella said, grimacing. "But yes, you more than anyone."
"Is it a matter of the crew's welfare?"
"As always."
"Tell me what you think you have to do."
She filled him in on everything they had learned in the last hour. Chisholm, as always, listened without interrupting. Only the tiniest elevation of his eyebrows hinted at his instinctive skepticism.
"It's all true," she whispered. "We're caught in something, and if we don't get out of it, it's going to carry us all the way to Spica."
"But even if we do get out of it, that may not help us much," Chisholm said.
"I could take the risk that we have enough fuel to make it home. I could take another risk that the engine will hold at 2 G's. But if I'm wrong about either of those two things, we'll find ourselves either stranded without power or dead?
Either way, my chances of making it home in the next 3 weeks don't look brilliant, do they?
I'm sorry, she said. He shook his head, as if it was nothing she should trouble herself about.
It was a calculated risk. I knew perfectly well that nothing was guaranteed.
He sounded brave and accepting. It was a good act, Bella thought. But Jim had been given a shot at staying alive, and he was now being denied that hope. She had just told him bluntly that he was going to die.
You want my advice on which option to take? He asked, with no detectable malice in his question.
No, she said. I know what I have to do. I still have a duty to my crew, Jim. I used to think it was my job to get them home in one piece. She paused.
And now?
Now I know it's my job to keep them alive. Getting home's a luxury. One I'll deliver if I can. But before I can deal with that, I have to deal with the first problem.
You have something in mind?
Janus, Bella said. She waited for Chisholm to say something, something incredulous or disdainful, but the slack mask of his face gave nothing away. Perhaps he had misheard her, or maybe he thought she'd finally gone mad. It's power we need, she said, stumbling over her words in her eagerness to please him. Power matters more than fuel. Rockhopper is a closed-cycle system. With power, we can last a long time.
But not forever, Chisholm cautioned.
No, not forever, I know that. But if we end up stranded on the edge of the system with empty tanks, we'll be lucky to last a month. Whereas if we stay where we are, well, we still have plenty of fuel in the tanks. It'll last a long time if all we need it for is to power the ship.
It'll still run out one day.
I know, Bella said, but the fuel isn't all we have. We have Janus itself. We have machines and people. We have our wits. If we can't figure out a way to bleed some power from that thing, just enough to keep us alive, then do we really deserve to survive anyway?
Are you serious? Do you honestly think we'd have a better chance of surviving here than by running for home?
It would buy us an indefinite amount of time.
While we're being pulled further and further into interstellar space.
But we'd be alive. We can do it, Jim. I know we can. There's more than just power out here. Look at all the water ice still left on the rearward face. We can mine that to top up our reserves. We can sift it for organics. We can find ways to make this work.
You've given this some thought, haven't you?
About 10 minutes worth. But if you gave me a lifetime to think about this, I don't think it would make much difference.
No, he said reflectively. You're probably right. That's always how it is with the tough ones.
It's my call, isn't it?
I think my situation disqualifies me from having an opinion, he said, pausing to lick dry lips. But whatever you decide, you'll have my absolute support. You're right, bringing them home isn't your first duty.
Then you agree with me, she said.
I didn't quite say that.
His expression was reproving, but not without sympathy.
I don't disagree with you either, but like you said, it has to be your call.
I'm not sure how it will go down with the others.
Chisholm was in the process of answering her when the siren drowned out his words.
That's the end of the slough, Bella said. We're facing the right way now. They'll be expecting me to authorize engine startup.
You could still give them what they want, Chisholm said.
I could, but I think our chances of making it back home would be about 1 in 4. I'm afraid those odds aren't good enough for me.
The ship held together as the rockets fired to arrest the slough. More water spilled from her tank, but not as much as last time.
Bella, would you do me a favor? Chisholm asked,
as if an idea had just occurred to him. Yes, of course, she said without thinking.
Call Ryan. Ask him to disconnect me from this thing. I think my presence might help when you have to explain this to the crew.
No, she said emphatically. You're staying in that bed.
I'm already dead, Chisholm said. The least I can do is make myself useful.